Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
The longest field goal ever attempted is 76 yards. The longest field goal ever missed? Also 76 yards. Why bring this up? Because knowing your limits matters, both when you're kicking a field goal and when you gamble. Betting more than you're comfortable with is like trying a 70-yard field goal. It probably won't go well. So set a limit when you gamble and stick to it. Want more helpful tips like this? Go to KeepItFunOhio.com for games, quizzes, and lots of ways to keep your gambling from getting out of hand.
This podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
Hello, everybody. Welcome back to Total Skewers Podcast. My name is Simo. Today, I'm joined by Jake. Say hello, Jake.
Hi, guys. Welcome back.
I'm also joined by Paul. Say hello, Paul.
Hey, how's it going?
Fairly decent weekend of football. A few strange results. Our beloved Billy is crestfallen again and refused to turn up to the podcast. We need to have a word with him, Jake. This isn't good enough. He's always turning up when Villa win.
Yeah, we can't have him.
You know, Villa wins. And he's like, yeah. Villa, oh, where are we podcasting, guys? Yeah. Let's go to Watford. Paul, you were at the Watford game. You were undercover. You were in disguise in the Watford end. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, I was. I got a ticket with the ultras in the Watford end, right behind. It was behind the goal Liverpool scored to in the first half. So yeah,
and among the goals. Watford massive.
Yeah, they were just the moaniest bunch of cunts.
That's a wee bit harsh, Paul. You know, getting top 5-0. I'm not going to be over them in, are they?
Yeah, that's true. He warned me. He was like, just listen to this. And then, yeah, first goal, 8 minutes. And yeah, they were not happy at all. A few of them. Left. I think it was 4-0. As soon as the fourth goal went in, they all just left. Like, at least 10 of them got up and were just like, fuck this. It was like, all right, see you later.
See you next week, guys.
Yeah. It was eye-opening. I felt bad for them, but Liverpool were just... Well, I think Watford were rubbish, weren't they?
Yeah.
And Liverpool just ran rings around them in the end. It was good to be at it. Pity it was in the away end, but yeah, like, I thought Watford didn't do much at all defensively, or definitely not attacking. And then, Liverpool I hadn't seen them like live, obviously, in ages at a stadium, but you can just like see how they all work together and how they build the attacks, loads of one touch in midfield and just moving the ball quickly. And Watford couldn't really live with them.
Yeah, I mean, they were absolutely superb. I mean, Liverpool slaughtered Watford. We were kind of talking about this before the game. Watford had a lot of stuff going for them for this match. You know, they had the early kickoff, they had the new manager bounce, they had Alisson and Fabinho, two incredibly important Liverpool players missing. On the table it was an upset, but Watford started so dreadfully, you know. And we were talking about it in depth in the Total Liverpool podcast. Go listen to that if you want. And one of the things I mentioned was poor old Danny Rose. Danny Rose had a terrible time, didn't he, Jake?
Oh, I felt so sorry for him. Like we mentioned the Liverpool pod. You know, if that's me, you know, that first 10 minutes, I'm going off with a fake hamstring injury. I'm not chasing Mo Salah for another 80 minutes. I know that for free. He got absolutely turned inside out. But full credit to him for trying his best. But when Mo Salah and Liverpool are in that kind of form, there's very few sides in the world that can stop them. And we've seen just how good that front three is. Still is. You know, there's been a lot of criticism towards, especially Bobby Firmino. So it's really nice to see him get a hat trick. You know, they're probably the easiest hat trick he'll ever score in his life. He's going to three tap in. So happy days for Bobby. I thought Mane's goal was excellent. That pass from Salah was just absolutely ridiculous.
Beautiful.
Paul had the perfect view for it, Paul. It looked even better from where you were sat. But It was great. And then that goal Salah himself scored was just out of this world. And for me, he is the best player in the world currently. He's so, so good. And just running out of ways to praise Mo Salah, I think I'm running out of things to say about him, because every week he's turning up and just doing something. And like week lately, after week, season after season, just continuously like taking himself to the next level every single time. And it's just crazy.
He's rightly getting applaudits from the from football fans everywhere now, you know. Touting him to be the best in the world and for Ballon d'Or and et cetera, et cetera. You know, which is great news for him. It's very much well deserved. I would like to see him win Ballon d'Or, but I don't know if he will. The players that play in the Premier League aren't typically looked upon for Ballon d'Or normally. Not for a wee while anyway. Mo Salah didn't win the Premier League or the Champions League last season, so that kind of goes against him. But you know, if they look at the current form and take that into account and how good he's been this season so far, I don't think you can look by him for this. I really don't. Anyway, if you want to hear a more detailed review of the Liverpool Watford game, please go check out Total Liverpool with myself, Jake, and Deej. Took a 40-minute dive into it and discussed everything about that match, and it was a lot of just gushing over Liverpool. So if you like that sort of stuff, go check that out. I know a lot of fans will be listening to that thinking, no, I don't want that. Please move on. And we shall. We care about all of our football fans that listen to us. So Southampton fans, will come to you. A quality win for Ralph and a terrible, terrible Leeds performance. Only 3 shots in the match for Leeds. None of them on target, I think. Off the top of my head, I think that must be the lowest shot total that Leeds have managed in a match. I think all of the screamers pretty much fit right Southampton off, but we thought they were going to struggle this season because of the important players they lost. But they seem to have, you know, great players coming through it. Livermento picked up another Man of the Match award. I think that's his third or fourth this season already for the young fullback. Not too bad. And the old Ralph Hasenhüttl camp, is it, Jake?
No, you know, their first win of the season, and I think they were bang on the money for it. I just quickly before we talk about the game, how smart did Ralph look, by the way, in his waistcoat? Yeah,
I love it when he does the waistcoat. I love it when he pulls out the waistcoat. He does it every now and then. It's like one in every 10 games he pulls out the waistcoat. I'd like to see the results lined up with the waistcoat and see if the waistcoat is like, he's got a better win percentage on it.
I know, yeah, it'd be interesting to see that. But I thought Leeds all season, to be honest, have been really lacklustre. They just have not got started, really. You know, they've picked up a few okay results, but it certainly is not the Leeds side that we saw last season. You know, the free-flowing, attacking, gung-ho football, which worked so well. This year, I think they've struggled a little bit to get going, but you know, they're not going to be in trouble or anything like that. But I was happy for Southampton. You know, they really did need that. We've ripped them off before the season sort of started, and they really needed that to drag themselves up the table and get a bit of confidence. And it was a lovely goal as well. I thought Nathan Redmond's run was, you know, stupendous, and it was a really nice pass and a lovely finish from Brozier, I think his name. So a really good goal, and it's his first start in the Premier League, and you know, your first goal, there's nothing more you can say there.
I watched the highlights of this, but one thing I did notice was the absurd formation that Bielsa played, which was a 3-3-3-1, I've not seen that for a long time. If I've ever seen it, it was quite strange, and the shape seemed to fall apart quite a lot. And there was a couple of times I was thinking, oh, dear me, is this a championship defence? Because it kind of looks like it. Paul, 8 games in, Leeds kind of need to get going relatively soon. Within the next few games, you'd think they need to get going, otherwise they kind of risk falling away a wee bit and find themselves in a wee bit of trouble at Christmas time.
Exactly. I think that's exactly it. Like, there's no need to panic. And obviously, if Bielsa has been around the block, he won't panic. But yeah, you're completely right. Like, if they don't start picking up results, they will. I think panic will set in and the fans will get more annoyed and the players will feel the pressure. And no matter what Bielsa does then, I think it can become too late if something doesn't change. They have the team to stay up, as we saw last season. But yeah, I think if things don't start picking up soon, then you might just find yourself in that where you end up having to like win games that you might have thought, oh, we could just draw this or whatever. Mm-hmm. If you had started the season better.
That's not a position you might find yourself in, really, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I don't think anybody really predicted that Leeds would get a second season syndrome, but it kind of looks like the beginnings of it, at least.
I don't want to
write them off just yet, because we are still earlier in the season, although 8 games is a fair amount in. And, you know, Sheffield United had stayed in the Premier League and performed well in the Premier League for the season because, you know, they had players playing above their expected performance levels. You know, they had a lot of Championship players that took a gear up to a Premier League level, and I think Leeds are in a similar situation. You know, I think you find when the pressure starts and things aren't going your way, that gear can kind of fall down back into a Championship performance mm-hmm. level. And then when that happens, I think it's quite hard to find that gear back up to the performance levels of the season before. And I generally thought it was just things weren't falling Leeds' way, and I'm kind of still of that opinion that things will swing their way eventually, especially when we get into these sort of colder months. And Leeds are running at you, but they were very much dominated by Southampton. Southampton were quite happy to play without the ball. 19 shots for the Southampton side. And, you know, it's not a side that Leeds would expect to be getting dominated by.
Yeah, that's what I was just going to allude to then. I don't, you know, on paper, the way Southampton have been playing this season, this is one of those games, like you said, Paul, where it's where Southampton, Leeds would be looking at that and going, you know, this is a game we can win here. And I think they'll be very disappointed by the fact that they just did not, even like, you know, if they'd lost the game, you know, like a scrappy goal and, you know, they played really well and had loads of shots but just couldn't score, then it'd be
dominated and lost.
Exactly. You know, they got absolutely battered. They had no real drive going forward and they lost. So there's no positives like really to even like sort of take from the game.
And you think that's almost a bit of a 6-pointer for them as well, because Southampton's probably a team that you'd expect to be around the area that Leeds would be come the end of the season.
Yeah.
So they can't really be losing to the teams around them. But we'll see where they are past Christmas. I think Christmas will give us a wee sort of indication. You always get a sort of stronger indication of what the relegation battle is going to look like at Christmas time. So as we approach that, see what happens. I think it's very much plenty of time for Leeds to turn it around. And I think they're more than capable of doing that. We next go to another boring Norwich game. a well-earned point for Norwich as they held Brighton to a draw at home, which is just a strong point for Norwich, I think. What are your thoughts in the game, Paul?
What more can you say then? Congrats. They doubled their points tally in 90 minutes. Brighton will just be devastated. Like, I guess they started so well and then it's really dropped points against Norwich. But yeah, it seemed like a pretty woeful game. I guess Brighton, if they had started the season poorly, would be like, oh, whatever, a point, that's fine. But seeing as they've done so well and they're kind of up in the top six, I think they'll be disappointed with this. And these are the games where like they really need a better striker or like someone who they can rely on, someone like Danny Ings or whatever, who can, like, if you get the kind of feeling that if someone like Ings was playing, they'd win this sort of game.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you very much do. But there's not the worst result for Brighton. They're still well up there near the top of the table, still off the you know, the great start to the season.
I think the big positive for Brighton is that Tarek Lamptey came off the bench. I think they'll be delighted to have him back here. He's going to...
Oh, Tarek Lamptey. He looked a good player for a while, didn't he?
Exactly. You know, and obviously had a lot of injuries in the last sort of year, so it would be interesting to see if he can pick up from where he left off before he got those sorts of injuries. I think he'll be good when he gets fit again for Brighton.
And that'll certainly young, help them.
Very young, yeah.
Very fast, young player. I mean, he was kind of get in the shape of a wing back, then a winger, then I think he was through the middle for a wee bit as well when Mapai was out. But yeah, I just, you know, there's other things going on in Brighton as well that we won't touch on that, you know, that could be causing complications to their team selection. And we'll see where that lands in the coming weeks. But we've got to move on, boys. We've got to move on to a much more interesting game, a bit of a Midlands derby, I think. Is Wolves in Midlands? I don't know.
It is.
I feel like it is. Yeah.
This is a derby game,
derby. There we go. our beloved Billy, is Villa lost? right at the death of the game. Ruben Neves putting down the sword.
Yeah.
I think, slashing it right through young Billy's dreams of getting anything out of this game.
Paul reveled in every second of that as well.
Yeah.
He was absolutely delighted. But I thought that Villa were really good for like 80 minutes. I thought they were decent for 80 minutes and then just absolutely capitulated. And it was, I don't really know what happened, to be honest. I sort of was flicking between this game and the Man United game. And at 2-0, you know, you think it's comfortable. John McGinn scores a really nice goal. Danny Ings is doing Danny Ings things. And then, you know, Sai scores. And I still, you know, thought that Villa would have enough to hang on. But, you know, they just fell apart. You know, the crosses were coming into the box. And the defenders looked like they'd never bloody seen a football before, never mind trying to head it away. And then, you know, giving away a stupid free kick and, you know, added time in that sort of area. It's just ridiculous. And then, I mean, they got lucky, you know, the goal, the free kick, a wicked deflection on its way in. I think it was going really, really wide. And then just that horrible deflection that as soon as it hit your man, you knew exactly where it was going. And, I think I can understand why Billy was, you know, in the corner crying to himself. But yeah, to throw a game like that in a derby, you know, at home as well, it's really not what you want. But I, you know, credit to Wolves. I think a lot of people at the start of the season sort of almost wrote them off as well, you know, losing Nuno and things. And, you know, they've won four out of, you know, they've won half the games. They've lost the other half. You know, they haven't drew any yet. You know, it seems to be win, lose, win, lose, win, lose. But
they could keep that. FC, aren't they?
Yeah, they could keep that up though, and you know, stay comfortably up. And I think they just need this year to be stable. Do you know what I mean? Where they can just, you know, happily stay in the league and rebuild again.
Yeah, I think that would be yeah, provide a foundation for next season would probably be a good point for Wolves and Bruno Lage, who's a highly rated coach over in Portugal. Even more disappointing, see when you have those games and you know, a Connor Cody scores against you and you kind of know that's the only goal he's going to fucking score this season and it was against us.
He's actually got two this season, so there's two sides who've thought that.
He's got two this season already. Good for Connor Cody. Good for Connor Cody. Proving them all wrong. Justifying that England call-up. Paul, just how much did you enjoy the result? Have you seen that? 90 plus 5 minutes, equaliser, Ruben Neves. Winner, Ruben Neves.
The thing is, yeah, I was at the game. I wasn't even looking at my phone or whatever. I only noticed at like 7 p.m. or whatever, so I was way behind on this. I would have been giving Billy much more abuse at the time. I know. Just couldn't happen to a nicer guy, I guess. But this one was mad because... like, it just shows no matter how rubbish you are for the whole game, get like two corners, or they got like all their goals from set pieces, like set two corners pieces, or whatever, yeah. And then free kick and two of the goals. Yeah, just dodgy goals, aren't they?
Three balls.
Yeah.
Oh, well. Sorry, Billy boy. Better luck next time, son.
You can't win them all.
Yeah, you can't win them all, mate. You can't win them all. Let's go to the King Power Stadium with Leicester. Dominated Man United. A poor Man United. Harry Maguire might have had his worst game ever in a Man United shirt. Paul, come shoot bad to you. What is going on?
What is going on? I think I said it the other week when Everton were playing United, but it's kind of the same again. One manager had a plan and one manager just had really good players. And you can see like who comes out on top. You just have to laugh at the United. Like, they're just, the first goal is just, how is this player, England captain and 80 million and United captain or whatever? It's just laughable that he's there in that position. But yeah, like at the same time, then they nearly got the draw, like, because their players are that good. So just, yeah, what we were saying earlier, Simo, that you just, if they had a bet, they're one manager away and probably a centre mid away from being a very good team. Like, so.
And I was saying that on another show as well. I mean, I really do think this Man United side are just laden with talent all over. And if they had a decent manager and maybe an extra midfielder, a defensive-minded midfielder that was of the level of the other players in that squad, on a similar level of the better players in that squad, then they really become that sort of like fourth contender for the title. And they're only 5 points off the top. So I'm not by any means writing Man United off, but man, you can just see when they're against, when all he comes up against better managers, it's just so in the foreground that it's just so blatantly obvious. And he doesn't really do a lot to hide it. And he never really comes with any sort of plan. It's just always, I've got the better player, so I should probably win this match or get a point, you know? But when you come up against, like, good managers, like Rafa Benitez is a quality manager, and so is Brendan Rodgers. These managers are going to find ways to get results with lesser players. So they really do need to... I mean, he must be a dream for the board, Ollie, because he's never really going to say no. He's just happy to be there. And you kind of get yourself into, you know, if a manager's just happy to be there because he's likely not to be in that position ever again. You know, he's won a prize, it seems. It's worrisome for the rest of the title contenders that Man United are that close. So fingers crossed there. Ollie gets a result. Not this week coming, but maybe the following week he gets a wee result. Keep him in there a wee bit longer. that'll suit me just fine. Any thoughts from you, Jake?
Yeah, Maguire, you know, he's come back from an injury.
And he wasn't fit.
He wasn't fit. And
don't know what he's doing in the squad.
To throw him into a team that, you know, against the Leicester side, we know how dangerous Leicester are. You know, Jamie Vardy, you know, 47 years old, can just run rings around everybody and like, do what he wants. Do you know what I mean? And, you know, I thought it was just a bit stupid. I get that Varane's not there either, but you've just got to sort of not risk it because Maguire's got a mistake in him anyway. Never mind when he's not match fit, you know, he's not fit either. He's half fit and you just sort of lump. I did feel a bit sorry for him because he gets lumped in there against, you know, the side he left to go to United. He's getting that's dog shit.
Could be a worst fucking.
Exactly. You know, and when United scored that Greenwood goal, I thought, oh, you know, here we go. Against the run of play, jammy goal. They're going to see this one out, go 30 unbeaten, and then Tielemans scores a worldie. And then I loved United scoring and then like Leicester immediately get to the other end and score it again. Like, it's just, I love the, I don't know if you saw the Goldbridge clip actually of it where he was like, yeah, we're going to, you know, get in there. And then he's like, oh, fucking hell, they scored. Like, just literally he was like fucking loving it. And then I think it was 54 seconds later.
It was excellent. I've seen it. It's been all over Twitter. It's been class.
You know, I thought United were just, you can't win the title relying on two or three players every game coming up with magic. Like, that's not a tactic.
It's not a foundation for consistency, and it's not a tactic.
It's not a tactic, and it's just hoping that, you know, I'm going to throw on five attackers and hope that we win the game. It does, you know, it doesn't work like that at the end of the day.
No.
Especially like you said, Simo, you're coming up against managers like the likes of Rafa Benitez, Brendan Rodgers, Klopp, you know, Tuchel, Pep, managers that are like, have been doing this forever. Do you know
even
what I
mean? Moyes will have his pants.
Even Moyes, yeah, you know. Man United probably look at David Moyes now and think, fancy you coming back if you want it, yeah. but, you know, they've got a tough set of result fixtures coming up now, so it will be interesting.
It's probably when he goes on his good run and the players kind of get up for it and just bail him out again.
Yeah.
But
that always seems to happen, doesn't it?
So. It's just poor decision making. I don't know why he's playing a half-fit Harry Maguire against a Jamie Vardy. Like, limit the amount of things to get Jamie Vardy up for a game. Like, that's fucking page one of the Leicester book. Like, limit ways to get this guy fucking up for it. You know what I mean? As soon as Jamie Vardy's clocked Harry Maguire, he's thinking, right, yeah, four today.
Yeah, I'm having you. That's it, though. He's looking at him and going, I'm targeting you all game because, A, you're not fit, B, you're slow as shit, and I'm not. Like, like even if you were fully fit, like, you'd fancy Vardy every single week over Maguire. Yeah. But, you know, half-fit Maguire's just like throwing me in at centre-back against Jamie Vardy.
You may as well, you know. dear me. Rightio. Over to Man City. The best manager in the world, Sean Dyche, took over the second best manager in the world, according to some people, Pep Guardiola. And unfortunately, against the run of play, Man City won this game. I don't think anybody's seen it coming. Extremely disappointing for the people. Jake, tell us a little bit about the difficulty that Burnley are in just now, actually. I mean, a lot of people really aren't putting Burnley in with a relegation lot just yet because they know Sean Dyche is there and they know something will probably come up soon. But, you know, you start to think, oh, dearie me, this is not looking good.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I think the positive for Burnley that it wasn't 5-0 like it has been the last four times they've been the Etihad. Yeah. I think that's a big positive there. But no, I am actually a little bit worried about Burnley. They're in trouble. There's no other way to sort of say it. You know, they just look a little bit lost this season. There's just something that's not bit like working that it has been. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's, you know, their side always, it seems to just be the same sort of team that it's always been. You know, I know they signed Maxwell Cornet. He's come in, he's looked good. But again, you know, it's one player coming into a squad that hasn't really changed in the entire time they've been here. And I think the other things that, you know, Burnley will be looking at is the fact that, you know, Tarkowski's contract's up in the summer, and in January he could very well sign a new deal somewhere else. And, you know, they've got things like that hanging over their heads. And I do fear for Burnley this year. Like you said, Simon, weirdly, no one's sort of mentioning them for the relegation battle, but I think they are definitely in that zone. And they need to do something quickly to get out of it. But I'm sure Daichi's got it up his sleeve. Yeah. He knows what he's doing.
He knows what he's doing. You've set the ship right, of course he will. Ben Mee is a big miss for Burnley. Obviously, Ben Mee and Tarko, as a centre backs, is huge for them. But you see when you look at the Burnley bench, such a throwback. It's so good. Yeah, it's you know, like fucking Wayne Hennessy, Phil Bardsley, Kevin Long. Fucking hell. They should have been in League One, but
it is literally like a bench of like 10 years ago that was.
Oh,
like,
it's so good. I just like, enjoy it so much. The only thing
Aaron
is
Lennon,
missing is
Aaron Lennon.
Yeah, Aaron Lennon. You know, you bang a Peter Crouch in there, you get the band back together, isn't it? It's fucking, it's glorious, man. Oh, I love Burnley. Yeah, City were good, I suppose. I mean, we should talk about that. But
City were City, weren't they? They were just
they're always good.
Very good.
You know, they had the bulk of the possession. They took a lot of shots. It was very nice football. Raheem Sterling started though. No goal for Raheem Sterling, but he is starting, and it's funny because he's came out and said he would take a move if it was on the cards, if he wasn't going to start more games. So he started the game, they've got the win against Burnley, so I don't know if he justifies his start for the next game, but there you go. He got that anyway. Anyway, we go to Brentford, Chelsea. Chelsea scraping one over the line, and I do mean that sincerely. Mendy had to put in a man in a match performance to keep them in it and get them over the line for 3 points. And big performances like that make the difference between 3 points and a point. So I was talking about Mendy earlier on in the season and how well he started, but I'm counting probably two or three games where Mendy's come out with big performances to get Chelsea over the line. And that's hugely important, especially when you're in a title race, and Chelsea very firmly at the top of that title race on 19 points, being chased by Liverpool and City. But yeah, Jake, give us your thoughts.
Mendy was wonderful. You know, that wonderful save he made from I can't remember which player it was, but the overhead kick was unreal, wasn't it? Like when it left his boot, I thought this is going in. Like what a goal that is! But he just comes out of nowhere. Like for every shot that like he was saving, I was just like, how the fuck have you done that? Like it's crazy. Like he was so good. But Brentford, credit to them. You know, we said it all season how good they've been, and they've come up and they've just like gone for every game, and they're not scared of anyone. You can see that, you know, scoring 3 against Liverpool, should have had about 12 against Chelsea. Like it's just, they're just like genuinely like don't they're care, fantastic. Do they? They're just very, very good. Look, compare them to, you know, a Norwich.
It's always like fucking bedlam in their stadium as well. The fans just fucking love it. They're just going mad every game. It's just like, it's fucking great to see, man. Like from the first minute, Brentford fans are like on their feet, fucking singing, cheering, loving life. I'm glad they're in the Premier League. I'm glad there's so many people that are around that club enjoying it. Chelsea started with quite a young back line. You know, Chalobah, who's come through this season. The young, his name escapes me. I think it's
Sarr.
Young Sarr. Premier League debut for him, I believe. And young Christensen, obviously, who's been a top player for quite a while, but still very much only like 22, 23-year-old centre-back. So a young back line, but, you know, it got them over the line. And I think Tuchel, if he's going to play with a consistent back three, then, you know, you'd need a bigger wealth of centre-backs than you would normally see at a club. You know, like sort of 5 centre-backs isn't maybe as many as you would need. And a side like that, you maybe need your sort of 6 or 7 to rotate with cup games and things like that. But yeah, it's title winning form for Chelsea. You know, getting over the line when you don't play particularly well. Yeah. Players banging out big performances like Mendy to get you the 3 points. And we've seen that quite a lot in Liverpool's title winning season. You don't really see that from a Man City title winning season. They just seem to kind of blow away the majority of the opposition. Because they are so strong against teams outside the top six, and even teams against the top six are extremely strong as well. But this is the sort of title winning season you traditionally see. It's a bit of title winning form you would see from a side. You know, just getting over the line, getting the 3 points, but you're not playing particularly well. So still very much in the race, Chelsea, or leading that race, should I say. We next go to a bit of a derby of old, Rafa versus Moise. I mean, if you'd asked anybody 15 years ago, would this be the Rafa versus Moise sort of derby, like Rafa Everton and Moise West Ham? it was quite good to see. It was a really exciting opening sort of half an hour. I thought West Ham were absolutely excellent at picking and when to put it long and going down both wings. They're so strong at putting in crosses. Looking a really good side, West Ham. A couple of players sort of away from a Europe. Solidly maintaining a European place, I think, West Ham. Everton, ever so strong as well. Almost got there. Couple of good chances. If it wasn't Iwobi in front of them, they might have got some in the game.
He's awful, he is. Absolutely awful.
He's not awful, he's Iwobi. He's extremely hardworking, versatile, just kind of a bit allergic to it. Yeah, just allergic to being good. go ahead, give us your thoughts on the game, Jack.
Iwobi just, I think, summed up Everton's performance. You know, like you say, you know, hard working and a lot of running, but they miss Calvert-Lewin and Richarlison. It's glaring in these sorts of games. You know, if Gray and Townsend are quiet like they were, you know, you need that extra spark. And Calvert-Lewin, if he was on the pitch, I think, oh, Richarlison, you know, a lot of those chances that Damari Gray was sort of firing in the box and Townsend was, then you know, then Everton probably would have won quite comfortably, but. Moise will be buzzing to go back to Everton and get a win and to beat Rafa as well. I think he'll be delighted with that. Because Rafa, you know, he got the best of him most of the time as Liverpool manager. But I think West Ham are a really good side. And I agree with you. I think, you know, West Ham are a European side for a while. If they keep this core of players and David Moyes doesn't have a mental breakdown and you know, lose it, then I think West Ham will be a really good side for the foreseeable future, because, you know, they do look really strong. I think their only worry this season is Europe. You know, it's their first time in a while trying to juggle that Thursday, Sunday schedule. And we've seen it before where it can affect teams. And, you know, it'll be interesting to see how well West Ham juggle that and how well Moise can rotate his squad without it sort of hindering, you know, league or the European performances.
Yeah, very much in the greens. Anything to add to that, Paul?
No, actually, nothing to add. Agree with what Jake said, really. Their recruitment has just been class. Like, their first 11 is one of the stronger ones in the league. And yeah, Moise has somehow turned it around. Like, it's tough enough doing your job without all the fans hating you. Like, the second time around, like, you turn up.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a really good point, actually.
He'd almost turned into a firefighter manager, didn't he, Moise? He was like almost in that bracket of like firefighter manager. But it, you know, he's took his chance, so credit to him. I mean, although he has got out of this fixture with a bit of luck. I mean, Damari Gray put it on a plate. Put it on a plate for Iwobi. And it's not as if he skied it over. He's just let it meg him. You know, you're like, oh no, not through the legs, Iwobi, no. Not like this.
Awful.
Lovely stuff. Thoroughly enjoyed it. And as I look at the matches that's currently being played, Arsenal hosting Crystal Palace. Arsenal are already 1-0 up, so we'll see who scored that in a little bit. Newcastle, Tottenham. It turns out having a lot of money in the bank and not have spent it yet doesn't actually affect the team. I don't know why people were expecting some sort of different Newcastle. I mean, they scored right away and I was thinking, okay, one. Too early. Far too early. John Joe Shelby red card is fucking beautiful. We've obviously seen a John Joe Shelby red card. I mean, having the money in the bank doesn't actually do anything to one, Brucey, two, the players that are on the pitch. I don't know what there was just so much like, oh, we're gonna win. I don't understand why. Paul, give us your thoughts in the match.
Yeah, well, you said basically Newcastle haven't changed, even though they have all the money in the bank. they were fairly woeful, weren't they, until...
Yeah.
Actually, they were just rubbish. And not that you wouldn't expect any different, but like Spurs haven't exactly been on top form all season. But
they've been about Swansea this season.
Yeah, really have. But like they were. It wasn't exactly game over at halftime. But like Spurs didn't really have to do much in the second half at all. I thought they'd go and score, but then they wasted a few chances, and then Newcastle got their goal like very late on, and you were like, oh, here maybe a miracle happens, but it never really got to that stage. It's a terrible position for Bruce to be in, because like everyone knows he's going. He knows he's
to be
going.
Fair, like credit to Bruce, right? He came out in the interview and he was like, he said, and not these words, but he said, I'd probably be getting the sack anyway, so it doesn't really matter. Yeah. Because I'm second bottom in the league.
I think it's such a strange situation because, you know, the new owners have come in. In the middle of the season where they can't spend any money, so they, and I think as well that the fact that it was almost like very last minute that a deal was almost done. It was like the phone calls made, right? I'm selling, and it was like, oh, Sal, we'll buy you. So it's like a bit like, you know, they haven't come in with like, I want this manager to come in. You know, we want this background, we want this and this and this. It's like they've bought the club, and it's like, oh. Right, yeah, who's our manager? Much. Steve Bruce. Oh, fucking hell. Like, well, find us a new one. And in the meantime,
what they're working like day and night on. It's just like getting the right man in. But it'll be interesting. I'm sure that's all they're sort of working on right now. Do you know what it seems like? Do you know what I imagine it like to be? Like, see if you'd won the lottery, but you hadn't spent the money yet. It'd been like, you've been waiting for the money to go in. Like, technically on paper, you were 100 millionaire, but you were still like in your house.
you're in your one bedroom flat.
Yeah.
Like, I've only got beans, like, I'm waiting.
But I'm waiting for this 100 million to go through, you know? The cupboards are looking a bit bare, you know?
Yeah, like I'm starving, but I'm a millionaire, but I'm just going to spend it. But no, I think it was, like you said, similar, it was weird because everyone was like, Sky were like obsessed, weren't they? Like, oh, you know, it's the turning point. And like you said, it's like, why is it the turning point? Steve Bruce is your manager. You've got one of the worst teams in the league. You've not done anything different, except, like you said, there's just this rich bloke sat in the stand this time. And Mike Ashley's not there with his Sports Direct mug. Like, there's no difference. Like, Adam Deck turned up. It's like, brilliant. Like, what do you want?
You say like, Ashley sat in the stands, but what you mean is Ashley sat at home getting a notification thinking, oh, fuck, Newcastle playing today. Shit. Yeah. Should at least send a representative.
But I think I'd agree with Paul, though. I thought Newcastle would, they were terrible. Jonjo Shelvey just doing
off
John
the bench
Shelby
red
things.
Card, that's just
like horrible, like couple of tackles as well.
Yeah
Jonjo Shelvey.
Yeah, god, like I want to like ask you both now, like realistically, out of this Newcastle squad, who can you say, apart from Sam Maximan, who's probably going to stay, who would you keep in that squad?
Right, for me, we had this discussion a wee while ago on in fact it was last episode we talked about this a little bit, and I said, right, ASM, yeah, he stays. Joe Willock Wilson stays for me as well. Wilson will probably stay as that sort of like third choice, second choice striker when they buy big. But the only one that I think that's sort of outside those players is Miguel Almiron, who I'm just not 100% sold on yet, but I think absolutely could be a tremendously good player. So I don't know if you have anyone outside that bracket. They'll be like, they'll say Fabian Scar or anything like that.
They're all rubbish.
Darlo will stay. No, but like genuinely, that's what I mean though. Like this entire squad, you know, the players came out and said, oh, you know, it's really exciting and stuff. And I felt like it's like, well, why are you excited? You're not going to be there in a year.
Yeah,
like, you will
be
all be sold. Like you're not going to get a bumper contract.
Brief minute,
you won't see any money.
Yeah.
Like you're gonna, you'll have like probably like a day under a new manager in the summer. Like, do you know what I mean? And it's like he introduces himself and says, "I don't know who you are. You're sold." Like, but like it does make you laugh. Like when the players came out, I'm really excited. It's like you aren't gonna be there. Like Fabian Schär, stop being excited.
Yeah, but it's like.
Oh no, listen.
When Jose Mourinho comes in and is like, is it John or is it Joe? You know? Yeah. It's actually John Joe. And he'll be like, too long. And then he'll be fucking gone. Like how Walker Peters ran out. He's like, Walker Peters is like, nah, too long, like, man, too long.
Your name's too long,
yeah. Like, yeah, you know, you never seen him again.
Yeah, gone.
He was sold on that day. Oh, dear me. No, I mean, they might have that one training session where, like, you think, oh, fucking
hell. With an elite manager.
Is that Philip Coutinho over there? Before someone taps him on the back and says, you've been sold to Middlesbrough.
Yeah, before, it'll be like Haaland will be tapping him on the back going, that's my locker.
Joe Linton is like going to lose that number seven shot.
He's not staying very long.
It'll be for the third season in a row. Joe Linton's played with a different squad number. What squad number am I now? You're 74.
Yeah.
Which means if all the youngsters get injured, you might get a start.
Yeah.
If the kit man can't play. If we can't register him quick enough, then you can have a game, Joe.
He is definitely doomed, though, Joe Linton.
He's gone.
The last we'll see of him.
A bit Norwich.
Do you know, actually, another point was, I was actually shocked that Steve Bruce has managed like 1,000 games, because I don't know how he's got that many games. Like,
it looks like he's managed 1,000 games.
Yeah, like I've seen his win records from all of his clubs, and I don't think he'd like got higher than like 40% at any of them. You think there's like a trend here that
you can tell he's not like he's not had like many good runs at clubs. Yeah. He's had some decent runs, but he very much looks like rather than a manager that's managed 1,000 games, he looks like a boxer that's boxed 1,000 fights, and he looks in shit state. Like, it was like,
they throw fucking cabbages at him and shit. Do you know what I mean? If that's me, right? If that's me personally, I'm at a football team and they're throwing like cabbages at me and stuff, I'm like, I'm done. Like, I'm out of here.
Yeah. Why am I fitting up with this?
Yeah. And another one actually that made me laugh was everyone was, you know, feel sorry for Steve Bruce, but at the end of the day, he's going to get £8 million when he gets sacked. Oh, so I don't feel sorry for him in the slightest. Yeah. To add to the other £100 million that he's earned over his career.
Exactly. It'd be all right. You know what I mean? And that's why, you know, when he comes out and he's a bit like, you know, I'm glad my parents aren't around to see this abuse, and I think, oh, that's dreadful. But at the same time, I think, Bruce, you don't need to do this. You're rich.
You're rich as fuck, mate. A Premier League Hall of Famer, like centre back as well. Do you know what I mean? Stop making out like you've like had a really rough time, because you've been doing this for like 20 odd years. You've been doing football since you were like 18. Like, don't give me the act. Like, I don't feel like, sorry for you. No, you've earned more money than I ever will.
Made more money this weekend than you ever will.
Exactly. Yeah, that's what I mean. Can help.
No, I mean, it'll be out to dinner with Big Sam and Roy and the rest of them. You know, they're very much, you know, it's
the dying breed of manager, isn't it?
But I know what I was going to say is, you know, Moise like reverse aged like 10 years when things started going right at West Ham. So maybe he just needs to get a run, man.
Be a good manager.
Stuff like, maybe like his nose kind of like goes back to the shape of a nose or something like that. Or, I don't know. I don't know what would happen, but Moise just kind of got a bit younger. It was weird. It happened like, you know. I mean, like, honestly, like, look back at West Ham games when Moyes first gets it's like a 4K HD camera we've got on him. You can like see into his soul, and you're like, fucking hell, oh Jesus Christ, someone turn that fucking out. And he wins a few games, and he's looking all right. He's looking like the good old Everton days, you know.
Yeah.
But I think we're going to leave it there, boys. That really got off the rails there for a wee bit there, didn't it?
Funny though.
Yeah, funny. If you want to know what the Arsenal game is happening right now as we speak, we've got Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang has scored 8 minutes in. And Palace are strangely playing 3 strikers up front. Mm. We've got got Edouard on the wing, Jordan Ayew on the wing, Benteke through the middle, and Conor Gallagher just behind them. So a very attacking lineup against Arsenal. But that'll do it for this show, boys. Thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you.
And thank you very much to the listeners tuning in every week. We really do appreciate you, and we shall see you on the next one. Cheers, bye.
find more great shows or join the team at sport-social.co.uk.
Sports Social Podcast Network.